Thank you, Andrew, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to this call. Sorry about the technological glitches, but there wasn't much we could do about that.
Unknown participant is now joining.
So we're just going to start on page 3 of the presentation. We've obviously published our interim results today. They show a material impact from COVID-19, which impacted March in particular. We'll come back to that. I think the important points are around liquidity and where we stand on that. And Andrew will go into this in detail, but we have secured liquidity for beyond
the financial year.
We've put in place additional bank facilities, and we've reached agreement with our bondholders on various covenant waivers and amendments which take us into next year. So I think we've done all of the right things in that respect. We also announced on the 22nd of May, I think it was, the creation of the joint venture with Carlsberg and the Carlsberg Masters Beer Company, and I'll come back to that. And I think where we are at the moment is, despite all of the
unknown participant is now joining
evident uncertainties in the market, is we are pretty well placed. 90% of our pubs are freehold. A very high proportion of those have got pub gardens or outside trading areas.
And it's Simon Johnson
is now joining
broad mix of food-led and wet-led pubs within the estate, and we'll come on to that in some detail. So just to sort of state the obvious in relation to COVID-19 and the impact that we had, obviously pubs and lodges were closed since the 20th of March, and there was a period prior to that when there was government advice to avoid going to pubs and restaurants, which impacted trade and business. So what has that meant? It's meant we've had zero pub revenue since that time. Also in our beer business, we've lost distribution or have had no distribution into our national pub group customers, which is an important part of our business, or into the independent free trade. So the only income that the company has had since then has been in from the off trade. And the revenue impact of that in March, we estimate at about 40 million pounds. Prior to that, up to that point, we had been broadly in line with last year. It wasn't an easy or a great 6-month period generally, because there was flooding in November and December and again in February and early March. So not the best period overall from a weather perspective, which impacted business somewhat, but broadly in line with last year and where we thought it was going to be. So given all of what went on, our priority has been to prioritize preserving cash as the number one thing. 93% of our employees overall were furloughed. That's near as, damn it, 99%, near enough everybody in the pub business. Pay reductions were put in place for at least 20%. Across the group and higher on the board. All non-essential spend, including CapEx, was clearly cut and postponed, and that remains the case at the moment. And I think we went straight into how do we support our retail agreements, our franchisees, our tenants and lessees. And I think that's something that has been pretty successful to this point in terms of keeping those partners on board and with us for the reopening period. And the final thing that we did of materiality was to suspend dividends for the current financial year. So a very disciplined approach to preserving cash for this year. In terms of where we are at this point, we have been working at Marston's very closely with UK Hospitality and the British Beer and pub association to liaise with government and to lobby government. And I think that's been my own view, has been very successful. Government support through this period has been absolutely critical. The furlough scheme was vital. The business rates relief, which for us is about 2.5 million of cash per month saving, again, has been a really important thing, as has been the agreement to defer indirect tax payments, so VAT, beer duty, those kind of taxes out to 2021. What the government has done to support tenants and lessees, I think overall has been extremely helpful. A sort of mixed score on that, because there was a split between tenants and lessees who occupied pubs with a rateable value of above or below 51,000. If you were below 51,000, you got a £25,000 grant. If you were above, you didn't. So we have at Marston's worked to support those lessees who didn't receive that grant, but overall a very important support for that part of the industry. We've also worked very closely with our key suppliers and other stakeholders, and I have to say, in general terms, that has been we found our stakeholders to be supportive and understanding. As we have with ours. So most have agreed to deferred payment terms. And although we're a 90% freehold business, we do have some leasehold properties. And I would describe the dialogue and the situation with our landlords as a constructive one overall. The one part of the business I did describe that has continued to operate throughout this period was in Marston's Beer Company, the off-trade. And it's been a really important thing for this to be the case, not just for helping cash flow, which is important, but also because I think we'll have done our brand positioning no harm at all. We've seen very strong growth, up 55% in volume terms to date in the off-trade. To put that in context, that is Christmas after Christmas after Christmas. So it's been a very, very busy period for that part of the business. And our market share will have increased because that is a rate of growth ahead of the market in the off-trade. So very strong performance, not sufficient to offset volume performance from the loss of the on-trade. And the margin characteristics and structure of that part of the business, obviously, it's a relatively low margin operation, so bear that in mind, but a very good performance nevertheless. So the positives from that are very active industry agreement and working closely with trade bodies, and a very strong performance in the off-trade to date in this second half year. So where are we in terms of plans for reopening? We've got the date, obviously, for England, as being the 4th of July, later in Scotland, later in Wales, we expect to open about 85 to 90% of our pubs. In that, the reduction in guidance from 2 meters to 1 meters has been a critical part of determining economic viability. We reckon that had 2 meters remained in place, the number of pubs that would have been opening would have been somewhere in the region of 25 to 30%. So you can see the difference that point has made. So as we reopen, what are our priorities? And I think I've described them in two areas. One is to do with the safety of our employees and of our guests. And secondly, to ensure that the pubs themselves are economically viable. So what are we doing in terms of safety? The government guidelines came out earlier this week. And my overall feeling about them is that they are pretty constructive. I'm not particularly fazed by too much that's in there. An important point about the guidelines is that they are that. They're not laws and they're not mandatory. They are suggestions and guidelines for safe operation. And there's a degree of flexibility which, if you've been following the media, you would not have picked up. It is not our intention to exploit that. None of us want to see pubs being blamed for local spikes or anything like that, or for operating practices which are not responsible or sensible or sensitive to people's feelings about all this. But the rules are not quite as rigid as has been portrayed, which is pretty helpful. So what are we doing? The key things that we're doing are improving or enhancing existing hygiene practices. So you will see tables wiped down more regularly. You won't see condiments on the tables. You won't see cutlery pre-laid out. The menus will be disposable, and you'll see hand sanitizer provided at entrances and various sensible points for that to be in place. There will be increased table spaces to recognize the social distance guidelines. We'll have distance markers on the floor and markers on the bar where ordering is happening. Where appropriate, we may have some screens at payment points or ordering points, but it is a point worth noting that the guidelines from the government do not actually suggest or mandate or require either screens or any other form of PPE. We are introducing ordering and payment apps, and they will be in place in July, which I think is a huge help. We've already got table ordering in place from some time back. We will be operating to a regime of simplified menus, mainly on the food side, to some extent on the drinks range side. And the purpose of that is basically to speed up service, and that has a positive safety impact, and it requires fewer people in the kitchen, and all of that should minimize the cost. I have to say in all of this that we're very positive about it. We're excited to be opening again on the 4th of July. It means we're going to have a business again, and we're going to have some top line to actually work with, which we haven't had for the last 3 months. However, it's not going to be easy, and there is a high level of uncertainty around predicting what will happen, either in that first week or first weeks, and then subsequently over the coming months is very difficult. If not impossible right now, and it will depend on many things, including whether people have enough confidence to go out and whether consumer confidence is stronger than it is at the moment. And in that context, my view is that the government will need to continue to be supportive of the sector and of business. It is going to have to be bold and imaginative in order to kickstart the economy and support consumer confidence. And to me, that means looking at VAT, which, to be clear, we are going to be arguing loudly should be cut significantly from 20% down to 5%. It should be an extension of the business rates holiday, if I can call it that. And they should also be looking at beer duty for wet-led pubs. And although you may say, well, that's a lot to ask for, given that the government is going to need tax revenues, my view is if the government does not act in these kind of ways, one way or another in the medium to long term, it is going to be getting less money. So those are some of the immediate things. Just an update and something, a reminder on the creation of the joint venture with Carlsberg, which involves our beer business and Carlsberg's UK beer business to create Carlsberg Masters Brewing Company. We received shareholder approval yesterday, and we still expect to complete the joint venture in the third quarter of this year. Just a reminder of a couple of the valuation points in there. That values the Masters beer business at up to 580 million, a 13 times multiple of EBITDA, and we will receive a cash equalization payment of up to £273 million on completion, of which, as a reminder, £34 million of that, or up to £34 million, is deferred for 12 months dependent on the performance of a basket of shares of companies in the sector. We will own 40% of it, and we are targeting reported synergies of around 24 million. And as I stressed at the time of announcement, we would regard that as a cautious number, and there are further unquantified and material revenue synergies that we believe are available. A really key point is that post the JV, we're expecting that to be net cash flow neutral, taking into account the dividends that we expect to receive, and the cash that we receive will be used to pay down debt. So a couple of points on that joint venture. I think it recognizes in full the value of our beer business, which we have built and developed in recent years through not just brand development, but also the acquisition of other breweries and brands, including Ringwood in Hampshire, the Refresh business, which is Hobgoblin and Breakspear, Thwaites, which brought Bombardier and Wainwright, and Charles Wells, which included the Courage Directors brands, Bombardier and McEwan's in Scotland, and the Young's beer brand, and also the licensed brands for Estrella Damm. So we've built that business very carefully. And I stress the point that we expect that the transaction is going to be cash flow neutral in future. That cash flow, top right of that slide, you can see there's a reported EBITDA of 44 million last year. Taking off CapEx and other central CapEx and tax, we're currently getting about 18 million a year of cash from Marston's Beer Company, which we're targeting to be maintained. So in valuation terms, just to go to the bottom left of that slide, what does that mean? It means that we've got a valuation for the beer business of 580 million, which sits at the moment against a market cap for Marston's PLC, which obviously includes the pub business as well, at about £400 million. You can see what I'm trying to get at with that point. So where does that take us in future? We'll be describing more about our strategy for the ongoing business later on this year. But fundamentally, what it means is that operationally, Marston's PLC is a pub company and is 100% focused on pubs, bars and accommodation. And I think that is a good thing. I also think it is a good thing that we have a pub portfolio which is across the entire spectrum of pub operations, from community pubs and wet-led pubs, food-led pubs and bars. But the majority of the pub estate is suburban in nature. It isn't town centre. I think that's an important point, because I suspect that town centre pubs and bars are the ones that are going to be suffering the most, or finding it hardest to come out of this at the end of it. And secondly, the vast majority of our pubs are pubs with decent outside spaces, pub gardens and outside trading areas. And again, I think that is going to be a differentiating factor going forward. So in terms of the pub estate, very much a focus on that. And we have a clear financial strategy which will continue. We'll be continuing to focus on debt reduction, and dividends we expect to be funded from free cash flow before disposals, and we will be disciplined about that. So that concludes the points from me, and I'm now going to hand over to Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks Ralph. Good morning, everybody. What I'm going to take you through in the next few slides is an overview of H1 profit, cash flow and debt, what we've done with our financing since the half year, and the implications on our financing of the joint venture. And then finally, I'll touch on the property portfolio and where that sits in our financing structure. So if we turn to slide 11, what this sets out is the earnings bridge between last year and this year. And as you can see, COVID-19's had a material impact on earnings in the first half. Revenues down around £40 million, flowing through to around an £18 million shortfall in earnings overall.
Christian Crosby
excluding,
is now joining.
Excluding COVID, there are three other items impacting earnings. As expected, disposals have pared back earnings by a couple of million pounds, and IFRS 16's impact has been around £3 million, in line with the guidance we gave at the prelims. In addition, as Ralph has just described, H1 earnings, underlying earnings, were slightly behind, reflecting the bad weather in November and the storms and floods in February of this year. So Kira and Dennis seem long and distant memories, but they had a significant impact on the pub trade overall, as was evidenced by the peach data during February. Looking at cash flow on page 12, net underlying cash flow up £55 million against the corresponding period last year, reflecting a higher level of disposals, so pub disposals of £61 million, and a lower level of new build spend has driven that. And that's flowed through to, in period on slide 13, a £40 million reduction in net borrowings. And it's slightly frustrating because clearly, absent COVID, we would have made even stronger momentum against our £200 million debt reduction target than we've achieved in H1, despite COVID. So that's, with regard to IFRS 16 itself, just to remind you on page 14, no impact on cash flow overall, aside from a £10 million switch between operating cash flow and financing, reflecting the reclassification of rent into interest. On the income statement, the impact is in line with the guidance we gave at the prelims. So we guided that the annualised impact would be somewhere between £5 and £8 million. So EBITDA up £9 million, reflecting lower rent, operating profit up £4 million, reflecting higher depreciation, and PBT down £3 million, reflecting the higher interest. And from a balance sheet perspective, we're now recognising additional lease liabilities of around £300 million and recognising right of use assets in the main of £280 million or so. So that's the H1 position. So what's happened since March? On slide 15, as we've already announced, but just to remind you, we've secured an additional £70 million of bank facility to November of this year, and covenant amendments for both September and March of next year. And that provides us with liquidity to take us beyond the end of the financial year, notwithstanding the positive impact of the joint venture transaction. And with regard to securitisation, again, we secured waivers to January 2021. And one of the green shoots from this process is that we now have clear visibility of our bondholder structure. It's a very tight register. And what you can see there is that those bondholders overwhelmingly supported those waivers. So virtually all bondholders actually voted, and 96% voted in favour. So we're well placed, absent the joint venture, to get through the foreseeable future. But on page 16, what we now have is where we currently are and how we're going to evolve post the JV completion. So our current position is, with that extra £70 million of facility, is that we have £430 million of facility. So that's a £70 million facility to November and a £360 million facility to March. In the circular, we highlighted that the drawdown on that facility was £312 million. So that gives us about £120 million of liquidity headroom. And the current monthly cash burn is around £10 million a month. As Ralph alluded to, we are positive beneficiaries of that off-trade performance, which has reduced our net cash burn overall. Now, as Ralph described, we expect the transaction, subject to competition clearance, to complete in the third quarter. So post the JV, what happens to our facilities is that the £70 million facility drops off. Our RCF still remains in place to 2024, but dropped to £280 million. I'm guiding a drawdown of somewhere between £90 and £110 million. That just reflects the true up on working capital and any cash movements we might have in the next month or so, to clear things like deferred tax, for as Ralph described. But as you can see at the bottom right-hand corner, what we now would have is a business that's got £170 to £190 million of headroom on a bank facility that extends out to 2024. And just to remind you, that facility was negotiated back in 2017. So the terms and conditions of that are already established. So what this shows is that we have a significantly improved balance sheet outside the securitisation post the completion of the JV. With regards to the pub estate on page 17, what is set out here is effectively where the pubs and lodges sit within our finance structure. So in summary, we are a 90% pub business. We have £2 billion of freehold assets, of which £1.2 billion sits in the securitisation. Just to remind you, that securitisation debt is currently around £730 million. And outside the securitisation, we have around £350 million of unencumbered freehold assets. So as Ralph mentioned, we have a high quality freehold estate located outside city centres, over 90% of which have garden space. We disposed of most of our pubs without gardens before the smoking ban. And we're well placed to exploit the opportunities in the medium term when COVID is behind us. And on that note, I'll now hand back to Ralph to talk about looking forward.
Okay, so the last couple of slides, looking forward. This is a business with a stronger balance sheet post the beer company transaction. We will continue to be focused on debt reduction from operating cash flow. We have a high quality pub estate, which relatively, I think, is well positioned. Andrew has made a number of those points in terms of having outside spaces, which is over 90% of our business, being freehold, again, around 90%. But the other two points I also think are important. I think, sector supply having been a barrier recently or an obstacle over the last 5 or 6 years, it's clearly contracting. Now the question will be on the other side, what does the demand side of that equation look like? But certainly for the first time, in quite a long period of time, supply is going to contract. And the other point, again, I think is important, is being balanced and operating across the spectrum of pubs, not being focused entirely either on food-led or wet-led, feels like the right place to be at this point in time. In terms of operations, we have got a very clear agenda for future growth, and we'll describe that in detail to you later on this year. But the essence of that will be to improve our organic performance in future through the increased focus that we will have and simplifying our business. So in summary, H1 had a significant impact from COVID-19 in March, which hit pubs and the beer business. I think we've acted appropriately and swiftly to protect liquidity, and we at this point have got very clear plans in place to reopen the business on the 4th of July. And I would stress again in that context, there is a high level of uncertainty around that in terms of what the revenue and earnings profile will actually look like. But we're very excited to be back in business. The creation of the beer company joint venture with Carlsberg is also exciting. Not only does it improve our balance sheet, but it provides material future opportunities to benefit from synergies. And I think that's quite a key point. And the final point is just a reminder on that, because it really is a fundamental point. Our pub estate is essentially a freehold business. Our exposure to leasehold is pretty minimal. So overall, short-term uncertainty, but well placed for the future. So what I'd like to now do is to hand over the meeting to questions. If you can know how to operate or can operate the raised hands function, please do that. If you can't do that, put your picture up and wave like mad. I'm not saying that we're going to ask you to ask your question, but it'll entertain us. So if you can wave, please do so.
Okay. The first one, we've got Tim Barrett, please.
Hi, morning all. Tim from Numis. Can I ask two things? Firstly, on overheads, obviously you were very clear, 10 million monthly cash burn, which looks like a good result. Can you talk about the main discretionary savings and any you might be able to hang on to in the future, efficiency-wise? And second question, balance sheet-wise, previous guidance of a 1x deleverage. Can you talk about how you feel about that now? Obviously, the 200 million target's been superseded by brewing events, but I think it'd be really useful just to get your medium-term view on debt. Thank you.
Yeah. Ralph, shall I take those?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Tim, I think as with everyone else in the sector, it's been a clampdown on minimizing labor costs, effectively just ensuring you've got minimum utility costs. You're effectively running the bricks and mortar at as low a level as you can. With regards to what we can say, what we can hang on to, I think Ralph referred to in his comments that we are looking at opening in a more simplified way and looking forward, looking at how we can simplify our business. So I think by definition, it's making us look at how we can just make business simpler. And by doing that, create a platform from which we operate parts of a lower cost base. But our primary focus is first and foremost making sure our guests are happy, and you know, in that regard, if you've got unhappy people, they're not going to come back to you. With regard to the balance sheet, our focus is to continue to pay down debt. Clearly, the JV has helped that, but I think what COVID has taught us is that we need to continue to look at reducing leverage to an even lower level to ensure that we are well placed to ride any future potential storm should that arise, even if the risk of that is very low. I think with regards to specifics on that, Tim, when we come back in the autumn, we'll have a firmer view on that, so we'll guide in the autumn capital markets day.
Okay, thanks. The cost question was also really looking a bit longer term to what you might do structurally with a more simple business, you know, basically.
No, very fair point. And I think, you know, our first priority in the first instance is to make sure that we deliver all of the elements of the TSA arrangements with the JV in that first year. But looking forward into the medium term, there is no doubt that by operating a pure pubs business, we will be able to simplify many of our support functions, and that will all be under review. And again, I'd expect to give some more specific guidance on that in the autumn.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Doug Jack.
Yeah, thanks. I was going to ask about the working capital situation, to what extent it's unwound in your numbers, and to what extent you think it might rewind in terms of the timing on that as the estate reopens. And in terms of the monthly cash burn, how do you think that will change when the estate is opened? And what's your kind of assumptions in terms of how you think you might trade from the 4th of July? Would you open, for example, all the sites on the 4th of July? Or do you think you'll phase that a bit over the month?
Ralph, do you want to answer that latter question? Then I'll do the former on the working cap and stuff.
Well, specific about what we open on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we are going to aim to open 85 to 90% of our sites on the 4th of July. The ones that we aren't will probably be, well, obviously Scotland and Wales won't be included in that. And we're a bit more cautious about some very high food-led businesses. But I think on the whole, we're pretty optimistic about the rest of the estate. And we'll see how those first couple of weeks of trading go in terms of, I mean, the key thing is being able to operate and be viable. And we're not going to know that until we've seen 2 or 3 weeks of trade at least.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the pub sector as, I guess, three pockets, Doug, there's community wet, there's mainstream food, and then city centre. Community wet, instinctively, it feels like there's some pent up demand, and we've just got to make sure we can operate with the guidelines. But to, you know, wet-led pubs typically cost less to operate. With mainstream food, the big question mark is, what does the grey pounds do? You know, are they going to stay in or not? And they are unknowns. And city centre for us, fortunately, is less of an issue, but clearly city centre footfall is under a lot of pressure. So they're the three things three pockets we'll be reviewing. On the working cap, Doug, we have not stopped paying suppliers. So the purchase ledger is in a pretty healthy place. We're not sitting on a wall of outflow. And clearly, with cash coming into the tills, I think we're pretty optimistic about the working cap position going forward. We can't hide the fact there is deferred duty payments and deferred VAT. The VAT is not payable till March of next year. But the discussions with the tax authorities are constructive. You know, they are sensible in how they want to receive that cash back. So to Ralph's point, opening the pubs, getting money in the till is great news for working cap. But we're not sitting on a sword of Damocles working capital issue.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Mark Irving Fortescue.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Two questions, please. One on break-even, one operational question. On the break-even, can you give any sort of feel for what level of sales you would expect the business to be able to break-even at once the estate is open, just, you know, based on some of the profit drop-through numbers you've seen since the March lockdown? And then the operational question is just around the guidance that we've seen from the government seems to leave a bit of discretion around things like bar versus table service. I think you've alluded to it, but a little bit more colour on, you know, your take on that, how you feel about stand-up drinking, etc. Maybe how you manage bookings and taking customer details to support the test and trace proposal.
Do you want to take the latter of those, Ralph? And I'll take the bogey.
Yeah, I will. So do you want to do break even first?
Yeah, on break even, Mark. As we've always maintained, pubs, every single pub has got its own characteristics. Typically, wet lead pubs can withstand a much greater level of volume decline than a food lead pub. We've taken a little bit of price on food and drink. So there isn't a broad brush, but typically the range is the way we've set ourselves up. We can take a 50 to 70% reduction in volume to break even. And that's been due to the fact, as I said, we've taken some price. We've simplified how we operate, but for wet lead, you can, you know, it's easier to break even than food lead. But we've done that on a pub by pub basis because every single pub's different.
Okay, on the question about the guidance, there's a sort of principle that runs through the guidance, which is it's got a whole series of fairly sensible recommendations, and its principle is, broadly speaking, is to apply those, but it generally has a rider to it which says, where not practicable, undertake other mitigating actions. So there's lots of recommendations, but in some pubs they may just not be doable. And where they're not doable, you should be focusing on doing other mitigating actions. And what are those other mitigating actions? They are things like the enhanced cleaning regimes and making sure there is table spacing and so on and so forth. So that's a sort of fundamental principle behind it. I do want to stress we are looking at those guidelines as things that, as far as possible, we should be adhering to, because for me there is a principle about being responsible, being sensible, and being sensitive to other people's views about what is and isn't appropriate at this particular time. To pick up on a couple of the specifics that you talked about, you mentioned bar versus table service. I mean, table service has been reported in the media as being, you know, you will only be able to be served at table. It's not quite that, that is not quite the case. We think that you will be able to order at the bar and then your drink or your meal will be delivered to table. That is not the same as full table service, and it's got a bit more flexibility about it. On the standing up point, there's a general guidance point against standing up drinking inside, not outside pubs, but inside. Although again, that caveat about where practicable is in there on this. Now that's not to say we're going to encourage stand up drinking. We're not, but nor is it saying it's completely outlawed either, because in some pubs it just may be difficult to operate any other way. However, when you do it, you should adhere to 1 meter plus social distancing. On things like bookings, clearly in our managed estate, we're well advanced in terms of booking systems, and that was all in place quite a long time ago. So I'm not anticipating there will be any issue with all that kind of thing. Track and trace is an interesting one. This is the request for pubs to collect contact details from people who come into the pub, or at least from the leader of a party, if I can describe them like that. So one person responsible for a group. Now, this has got all sorts of complications about it. It's not necessarily something I think is particularly sensible, and I don't understand why pubs are going to have to do it and lots of other retail outlets aren't going to have to do it. But the recommendation is there, so we will trace data, I think, and we're still talking to government about this, will be provided digitally through things like access to Wi-Fi, so that gives contact data, or from table ordering, or from payment ordering. So there'll be a digital footprint that we can probably use for most people. Some pubs, particularly in the tenants in the lease sector, are likely to simply rely on pen and paper. That's going to be interesting. But what there is not in place is any kind of law that says if you don't get the contact details of every customer who's sitting in your pub, you will be closed down. It has not been put forward like that. It has been a request to help the government where possible to provide contact data, and we will obviously work with them on that score. I think there are other things from the guidelines that, quite frankly, we don't really know how they're going to pan out, and won't know until we've opened. So quite how queuing is going to look in a pub environment, we'll probably only get a feel for that when we've opened and see what the pattern of trade is. However, we're having to think about how we manage queues, how we manage that outside space, how we manage things like football in pubs, which, although entertainment in pubs is not allowed, actually I don't think that was a discretionary point, that was a you should not have entertainment, it did not include football within that. So our understanding at the moment is that football and live sport will continue to be allowed. So where we have it, we'll have it by seating appropriately spaced out, whether that's inside or outside, and we've already taken steps to make sure that where we've got it outside, we've got extra seating and places for people to enjoy the match. And so there's a lot of detail in this. My overall assessment of it is that it's pretty sensible and something we can work with.
Yeah. I mean, on that outside point, Ralph, just to supplement, not only are we introducing additional seating,
is now exiting.
We've purchased additional screens for 100 pubs to show sport outside as well, to exploit that, because unlike July last year, clearly there was a football season. As a fan of Liverpool, of course, I'm not worrying about the title, but clearly other fans have other things to worry about.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't get your hands, Ralph. So,
if there are no more questions, thank you very much, everybody, and I wish you a good day. Thank you.
Multiple people are now exiting. Multiple people are now exiting.